questions. Ruth.
It bugs me a little bit, a lot, I guess, about science seems to be the holdback of this being an acceptable method for having a child. Mm-hmm. If you got to a point where there was only one egg and one sperm that got united in a petri dish, and because you didn't have the physical act of lovemaking, you certainly still have the psychological and spiritual act of lovemaking that went on to do that, you put in kind of that. Why isn't that acceptable?
You're talking even within marriage.
I'm talking about it, certainly.
Okay. Well, again, we have to look at how the procedure is done.
Just if you have a sperm and an egg,
yeah.
You lovingly contributed to that, and you've got only one embryo that evolves from that, which is apparently a scientific thing that hasn't been progressed to that point. And then you plant that back into the woman's womb,
mm-hmm.
and it takes it. That seems to me to be just a super loving thing that went on there. Why would there be a problem?
Yeah. Well, a few things. Is first, we would have to look at, and again, I'm not accusing anyone of having bad intentions. You know, the intention in all of this is, I'm sure, for most people, I'm sure it's very upright. I'm sure that they're not looking. Yeah, yeah. Now, I will say this, too, before I answer your question. I will say that, and one of the things the booklet points out, is it is very interesting. It is very interesting how much all of these things are connected and how much so many of these IVF doctors are getting paid so often when you actually look at who their supporters are and the kind of wheeling and dealing that's done.
That was annoying, the first thing you said at the beginning of the program, but in your county.
Yeah, yeah, but how much they get paid often by these research agencies that know that there are going to be leftover embryos, you know. So every 20 embryos you give us will, you know, and that's the thing, is they know that they're going to be left over. And the other interesting thing, too, is the fact that this feeds right in with contraception and with abortion, you know. It's often the women who are using contraception for years and years and years who then have a problem conceiving, because we all know that the pill, number one, increases chance of cancer, and number two, increases chance of infertility. And you do both of those, and then what happens when you are finally ready to settle down? Then you can't have a child, and well, now you have to resort to IVF. And I mean, it's all connected. But to answer the question, the problem becomes, number one, how are both of those, the sperm and the egg, again, the eggs can be retrieved without any moral difficulty. The retrieval of the sperm, that becomes more difficult. Obviously, any type of masturbation is morally illicit. I mentioned the use of a perforated condom. That can be, of course, morally illicit if the sperm was collected during intercourse within a marriage, right? And you can collect some of the sperm that way. Theologians will also talk about an embryo's right to be conceived in its mother's womb, that to be conceived in vitro, in a glass, is below human dignity. That as human beings, our dignity demands that we be conceived in our natural place, which is in the womb. Well, but again, that's an argument that's made that human life shouldn't be dealt with in a dish. I mean, there's something very dirty and very below human dignity about putting human life in a glass dish, in my opinion. Now, that's why some of the procedures which are okay are ones that collect eggs and collect sperm, and then independently, without joining them together and then putting them in the uterus, they inject them separately into the uterus and allow fertilization to still occur there. And those are arguably morally illicit. Those there are much less problems with, if any at all, because we can still make an argument that, okay, well, you are aiding and not replacing the marital act. Because, again, there are some issues where the woman's egg doesn't travel down to the uterus as it should, and the sperm isn't working as it should, and so we collect them separately and re-inject them directly into the uterus.
It's just a matter of scientific development.
But as you know, morality is not just intention. I mean, when you look at morality, and one of the classic Catholic teaching on morality is that it's the act itself too. It's not just my intention, it's what I'm actually doing. And to give you a parallel example, on the other end of life, euthanasia, you know, my intention might be completely upright. I don't want to see grandma suffer anymore. I love her so much, and this cancer is just killing her, and she's in so much pain, and even the pain meds aren't doing anything, and I want her to be at peace, and I want her to go to God, and I don't want her to be in any pain. My intention is completely upright. Completely upright. But the actual act is killing grandma. At the end of the day, it's injecting her with something or withholding something that is vital. And so we could say, well, look, your intention is fine. Your intention is perfect. But look at the act itself. The act itself is what's crooked. And because the act is crooked, even though your intention is upright, I mean, the ends don't justify the means, right? And so the ends might be perfect, but the means, what you are doing, is where the immorality can come in. And it's a parallel example, but we could use a few different types of examples. But with morality, it's not just intention. You have to look at the act itself, and you have to look at the circumstances surrounding the act.
Mm-hmm. Like fertility drugs or infertility
drugs. Right.
That would be okay. That's
mm-hmm. And that's why I'm saying, you know, any kind of things that assist but do not replace. So, for instance, a woman might need something to regularize ovulation or to cause ovulation or to cause a de-inflammation of the uterine wall. Or men, you know, they might need Viagra, or they might need something to help cause the erection and to cause ejaculation, and that's fine too. Or to increase sperm count, those things are all morally licit, because again, you're aiding but not replacing the marital act. I said they would be morally licit. Yeah, morally licit, meaning okay, yeah, as opposed to morally illicit. Right. Right, and there are those issues too, because some of the drugs that cause multiple ovulation, and then they all get fertilized, and now the woman has four babies growing inside of her, and sometimes just naturally there's a natural miscarriage. And again, there's nothing wrong with that, because obviously you're not intending that. Although there is still something kind of risky. I mean, when you do that, you kind of know that you have a chance of conceiving a lot of kids at once, and you kind of know that your body is going to not allow you to carry all of them and is going to naturally get rid of them. Now, again, that's not abortion. It's not abortion, because you're not actually killing it. It is abortion when at IVF and they implant three and they all take, and then, oh, well, you don't want three, do you? You just want one, right? Okay, well, let's get rid of the three that don't look good. I mean, that's obviously abortion. Yeah. Bill.
Not to put you on the spot, because this is not quite the topic, but I assume there's, there's federal regulations as to the handling of the embryos that are not used, that are fertilized.
You know, I'm not sure that there are. I know that this you know, I don't know enough about that, how long they're held on to, or what I do know is this, and this will knock your socks off. In the US alone, there are over 100,000 right now human people on ice. In the US alone right now, there are over 100,000 embryos, human persons on ice. And you can see why there is such a concern among people to want to rescue those, you know, to adopt them.
And in Chicago they vote.
And in Chicago they vote. Wow. But Yeah, I'm not quite sure about... I remember there was that big issue, I guess it was the summer of 2004, when President Bush had made the decision about the embryonic stem cell research, and he had said that research could continue on those stem cells, those stem cells which had already been killed, but that no more could be killed, which was a compromise. I mean, not completely... Not completely a good Catholic decision, but better than, yeah, just kill as many as you want, because you're still then testing on human beings, which is never moral, you know. That's one of the other problems with this, too, is you end up treating the human person as an object of science, you know. It becomes something that we can perform tests on. And it's like you're dealing with a living human being here, but... Again, I don't know about like federal regulations on them, but yeah, Brett.
So, my understanding of the issue with embryonic stem cell research is the fact that you're creating the light just to destroy the research. So, if you had, like, you could test me to make sure that this, biology drug works, you're going to talk about that.
Right, to, oh, sure. Yes, so, yeah, when you... as a rational human being who's able to exercise your free will, say, sure, I volunteer to be tested for some new allergy drug or whatever, that's you exercising your free will, volunteering to do something that's not going to hurt you, or not going to kill you at least, right? That's much different from, we don't know, but that's much different from if we didn't ask your permission, and we just got you one night and captured you and decided we're going to test you because your parents don't want you anymore. you know, that, and that's what's going on with this is again, an usual cycle of IVF, 20 eggs, roughly 20, 30 eggs are all conceived and then you have those leftovers. And the way it's presented to so many parents is, oh, well, just... sign here to have them donated to science. You know, that's the good thing to do. Just, you know, you don't want them to sit on the shelf forever. You know, let's donate them to science so at least we can get some use out of them. I mean, again, that very language. You're going to get use out of them? I mean, like, you're going to use them? I mean, that's a human being. You can't use a human being. So, again, against their will... You didn't consult them. You didn't ask them. And using them, by the way, is killing them and harvesting their cells. That's using them. You know, when we test an allergy drug on you, we don't kill you. But anyways, yes.
Talking about rescuing the embryos, they were saying that in order for sex to be able, you have to have the sex in order to procreate. So you're taking that away. So are we saying that it's the better of the two evils?
Yeah, that's kind of the debate with the embryo adoption is, again, you know, like the discussion is just, you know, with Ruth, the intention might be completely upright, but the act itself, I mean, you're now introducing into your body the product of someone else's, supposed to have been lovemaking. I mean, and it's just riddled with all sorts of... moral issues, and again, the intention is completely upright. They want simply to save these children who are on ice and who are otherwise just going to die. And the way the argument goes is, look, they're going to die anyway. So either they die sitting on the shelf, or they die being thawed for the sake of trying to implant them, and. You know, that's kind of the way the argument goes, is they're going to die if we leave them on the shelf. And they might die in the thawing process, but they might not. And they might live, and they might attach to the uterus and grow into a healthy baby. And that's true, they might.
But does that open up the the twilight they died, so we're going to go back and try it again. And that could lead to almost pieces of it.
Yeah, and again, that's why the church hasn't actually approved it. So, I mean, the church, again, hasn't really condemned it because it's so new. It's the church makes decisions very slowly because we really need to, like, see and understand. We need to really make sure we know exactly what's going on. But again, it was very interesting to be at the seminary when that decision came down from the Vatican, when that document came out of the Vatican, because it closed the discussion on certain things, but it left the discussion open on others, and that was one of them, the whole embryo adoption thing. And there were priests in my seminary who are all Orthodox, solid Catholic priests who disagreed with each other on this particular point, and making both sides of that argument. You know, it's one of those things that is still debated, you know, and the church has not spoken definitively on that particular point. Because again, the other argument goes, well, what else can we do? What else could possibly be done to save them? And some people say, well, surely something must be able to be done. You know, we can't just be left with an unsolved problem. And others will say, yeah, we are just left with an unsolvable problem. We've created a problem that we can now not solve. We now have 100,000 human people on ICE. And there might not be a morally licit solution. You know what I mean? Every possible solution may in fact be immoral. And we may have actually created something that we now can't fix. And that's the problem. Yes? Well, the same thing that would happen to a baby who's miscarried, or a baby who's aborted. I mean, the Catechism says that we entrust them to the mercy of God, you know, because basically they were denied ever really getting to live and breathe here on earth. I mean, their soul is there, just as the soul is there in a baby who is miscarried or a baby who is aborted. And I don't know if the issue you're trying to get at is the whole baptism issue.
Yeah, and
right, purgatory. Listen to my talk on purgatory. It's on my website. Because I actually addressed this very issue. Because there was this whole idea of limbo and unbaptized babies going to limbo. And I talk about all of that in that particular talk. But the short answer is, we don't believe in limbo. There is no such thing as limbo. There were two types of limbo that we talked about, and I get into all this. And they don't go to purgatory. I mean, purgatory is to get rid of, you know, actual sin. So they haven't committed any actual sin. I mean, there's original sin, which has been inherited. And so what we say is, we entrust them to the mercy of God. You know, they weren't baptized. We like to think so, yeah. But again, the church doesn't say that either. The church doesn't say they're automatically in heaven. The church says that we entrust them to the mercy of God. And that's all we can say, you know. We can talk about, and this is one of the things I talked about in my talk, is we can talk about baptism by desire. We can talk about, you know, because the problem becomes, Scripture makes it clear that you have to be baptized to be saved. Scripture makes that clear. And so then the issue becomes, well, does that necessarily mean, like, baptism as we understand baptism? Like, someone actually poured water over your head and said the proper formula. Or could baptism mean something else? Could it mean, in addition to that, could it also mean a baptism by desire? Meaning that parents were planning on having this child baptized, would have had this child baptized had it not miscarried or whatever. Or would that child have wanted to have been baptized had he or she known what baptism was? I mean, that's why we get into this kind of sticky area of baptism by desire, or even baptism by fire. You know, in the case of some of the early martyrs of the church were catechumens. They were not even yet baptized, because in the very early church, to become a Christian, and this is back when Catholics were the only Christians, in the very early church, to become a Christian, it was like a 3-year process. And there were often people who were catechumens. They were not yet baptized. They were in the conversion process. They were doing, you know, what they had to do to go and to become a Catholic, and they were martyred for the faith, you know. And so in those cases, we say, well, wait a minute, they laid down their life for the Christian faith, but they weren't baptized. And so we talk about, okay, well, baptism by fire, or baptism by sword, or whatever you want to call it, but baptism by blood, you know, that they were baptized, and we revere many of them as saints, right? And so obviously if they're a saint in heaven, you know, okay, well, they weren't actually baptized because they were still catechumens. Well, okay, fine, but so it becomes kind of difficult, but that's why the church does not say anything about limbo anymore. Yeah, listen to the talk. There's a lot more information online. Any other questions? Yes, Rick.
It seems to be just a degree of difference in the scientific. Anyway, if all these 100,000 embryos were sitting around, mm-hmm. we believe that they are people with souls.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never been given the chance to go into a person.
What do you mean by into a person?
They've never attached to a uterine wall or something like that to grow.
Okay, but is that how we define a person? Right. Tread carefully.
Once that fertilized egg mm-hmm. is implanted in the wall and mm-hmm. has a chance to grow, well, maybe that's the point that we should think that as a soul and as a person, etc., and all these other fertilized eggs who are not given a chance to do anything are really not people.
Yeah, that it becomes a very slippery slope. Because this is the argument that proponents of abortion. Right. Right, sure. Sure. And that's the thing, is you're right, it happens all the time. I mean, women miscarry, you know, a day or two into pregnancy, didn't even know they were pregnant. You know what I mean? And again, obviously there's no fault in that, there's no sin in that. They had no idea. They're not even going to know they had that child until they get to heaven, you know? But we have to tread very carefully, because that same argument has been used all throughout the spectrum of life to justify everything from abortion to euthanasia to infanticide. Because wherever you draw the line, wherever you say, this is when you become a person, and everything before that, you're not yet a person. Well, you can always say, well, what about right before that? And right about what before that? And that's why the church says, look, conception is the very first possible point where the line could be drawn. I mean, no one would argue that it's a new human being before conception occurs. When you have sperm and egg separate, that's obviously not a new human being. So the very earliest you can draw the line is fertilization and conception. And that's why the church, erring on the side of being safe, you know, we say that's the earliest. Because if you, and people throughout history, theologians and scientists throughout history have tried drawing the line to say, well, it's not human life until this happens, until this happens, until this happens. There were arguments that, you know, human life didn't begin until quickening. You know, when the baby first started to kick, that's when human life, or some people said human life didn't actually occur until birth, that somehow once they were born, that's when they got their soul. And it's, I mean, as ridiculous as those kinds of things sound, because we say, well, wait a minute, you know, a baby who's 9 months pregnant, but hasn't been born yet, doesn't have life, but the baby who's 7 months and who was born premature, and they now have life, but the one who's 9 months but still happens to be in the womb, they don't have life? I mean, so it becomes very, well, we say, well, wait a minute, well, so the line can't be birth. It, what about quickening? Well, it can't be that, because what about before this? And so that's why the church says, wherever you draw that line, there's always going to be, what about before, what about before, what about before? And that's why we draw the line at the very earliest possible place you can draw the line, which is, again, conception. But, you know, it's funny because I was reading something in the news just like 2-3 weeks ago, and I think it was in the United Kingdom or it was somewhere, but legislation was basically introduced to say that, basically justifying infanticide, basically saying that you didn't actually gain rights as a person. You weren't actually a person until you had reached a certain point of cognitive, and basically they were trying to use this to justify, you know, if you gave birth to a baby who had Down syndrome or some other kind of, or if you just didn't want it anymore, that you could abort it post-birth, that it was like a post-birth abortion that was killing the baby. But we, as Catholics, we say, look, your rights don't come with an ability. Because again, if rights come with, because some people have said, well, you don't have your rights, you're not a human person until you have the ability to reason. Okay, so anyone under 7, we can kill because they don't yet technically have the use of reason. And once you're too old and you've gone crazy and you've lost your use of reason, well, then you're not a person anymore, and so we can kill you then too. I mean, these kinds of arguments have been used by very extreme people who want to justify all sorts of crazy things. So I would say, you know, we're not in a position to draw the line. We're not in a position to say, yes, the magical line is when it attaches to the uterine wall. That's when it gets life. Because it'd be nice to be able to draw the line there, because then we could say, well, then that means that those 100,000 fertilized eggs are just fertilized eggs, and there's not actually a human life there. But but that's what I'm saying, is we haven't really drawn the line. We've said it's at the earliest possible place, because it can't be before that. I mean, so in a sense, we're not drawing a line. I mean, if you want to say drawing a line, I mean, it's at the very beginning. It's before there isn't, you know what I mean? So the only thing before conception is when the sperm and the egg are still separate, and that's obviously not. So that's why the church, erring on safety, says right at the moment of conception. That's the earliest. So
yeah. These so-called scientists who are so-called sane actually have a group home say 1 year. You get 1 year to decide.
Yeah, I mean, it's
1 year, you don't like this.
Yeah, it's some crazy stuff. Yeah, Brad. Because it's convenient.
Yeah.
It's convenient if we make it different for us, because then we can do what we want. And again, when you look at what happens at conception, when you look at what happens and you see that now you have this one-celled organism, albeit just one cell, it now has a complete set of human DNA, different from the mother and different from the father, and has the full potential of becoming a human being. I mean, what else is that? I mean, yeah. And other people will do things semantically. They'll say, well, it's human life, but it's not a person. And they'll try to make that distinction that, okay, yes, fine, we grant you human life at conception, but you're not a person until this point happens, because as soon as you're a person, then you acquire rights, namely the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit to happiness, right? And so, fine, there's human life there, but it's not a person until X, Y, or Z happens. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
On the books, in most places today, we don't claim the moment we try.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's whether or not you plan to abort the child.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I think science is definitely, as in every case, I mean, science is on our side. I mean, and as the science becomes more and more sophisticated and more clear, I think what the church has been teaching will just continue to be backed up even more and more. Because, again, as these things are proven objectively, you know, that, look, there's there's a new organism there, you know. I think our position will become more and more accepted when they see the science behind it, you know. So I'm all for science showing the truth here, you know. So
how many people who are so jumping up and down by talking to babies or killing the whale, the thing of worship?
Yeah, yeah. So one of my favorite pro-life bumper stickers was, you know, like you always saw the save the baby whales or save the baby seals, or this one was save the baby humans, and it had these like humans, but they were kind of like in the shape of whales and seals, and kind of cute. But any other questions? Anything going once, going twice? Okay, so the booklets are up there, and I think next month we'll probably do the death penalty. FYI, why the Catholic Church is opposed to the death penalty. So, come next month for that.
Thank you,
thank you guys for coming.